Mr. Chadwick, Reel 9. We were talking about your time with the 16th Battalion, and we've come to the point where they actually fly to Greece, which is December 1944. This was actually still quite a unique thing, you know, an air troop movement. Were you aware of that and what at the time?
No. Then they took everything as it came. As I say, you didn't know where you were going until you were there to claim the sun, and you were completely in the dark. And then, once in the air, it was brought to the troops where we were going.
What was the flight like?
Well, a classic example of that, the aeroplanes that took us days later when we were in Greece, we saw these aeroplanes, and they were full of holes. Absolutely riddled with holes. Cut a long story short, we asked the aircrew what the score was about that thing that tip, and he said that the degree of maintenance in wartime wasn't by pre-standing, and every time he took off and landed, so many ribbies were blown out. But he said it's nowhere near a danger point within a number of months. The ribbies, most likely after ribbies were out, they'd have it re-ribbited at what it were. But they were Dakotas and they had a wonderful record. But that blasted us into Greece.
Did you know why you were going there, or did you understand what was going on with ELAS and all the rest of it?
Just communist was the word mostly used, and there was, when we got there, there was ELAS and Kappa Kappa Epsilon, or KKE or something. Not long after we got there, 2 or 3 weeks, I think with about, I don't want to tell you, about 80 or 100 men taken prisoner one night. And they were marched over the Macedonian mountains. They took the boats off them and given to the ELAS and marched these lads for about a couple of 100 miles or whatever up in the hills. And we didn't see them again because when they did ultimately come back, they were all repatriated and sent on leave. So we lost touch with a lot of them.
Now, when you first arrived, you were in the area of the aerodrome, and one platoon was actually on the Parthenon.
The Acropolis.
Yeah.
That's right. You
weren't in that
one.
No,
I was in Mavro.
Now, Mavro, if you just explain, that's Les Thornton.
Yes.
And it's in Greece he got his nickname. Did he get it straight away, or was it later when the situation had calmed down a bit?
He'd been having a few beers for the last year or so. But what happened, Major Casey was still in the chair as company commander, and this night I saw Les was a little tipsy, for want of another word.
Now, what rank were you at this time? Still a
corporal. He now decided to go and settle the war himself. So he ups and waltzes down the street, firing at everything he saw, because some of these chaps were on rooftops, and firing behind chimney pots. And how he wasn't shot that night, I will never know. They ultimately came back in case he was waiting for him. And he said, I want you. And I'm putting as clear as I can. And Mavro said, I have been cutting up my duty, sir, a one-man fighting patrol. And nothing to report, sir. Now that's just how the story went. How he was alive, Peter, I do not know. He was crazy. But he was old, he was, but he still did his job. He's a likable character and the least I can say, he's the most genuine person.
Had he started drinking that drink then, or did that come?
Then, Mavrodaphne in Italy. The Mavrodaphne game in Greece.
What is Mavrodaphne?
It's like I don't know if I can remember. The national drink is Letzina. It must have been there. Crossy, they call it. Letzina. Well, Letzina, vodka, and snaps are all about the same potency. And you don't need many. And the physical condition we were in, we were getting it. And it was not in hell out of us. But of course, Les and his friend. But being back at company headquarters, he'd a better chance to get all the stuff. Because it was all house to house fighting.
Now, how did the. Because when you first got there, it was quite quiet. When did the trouble first start, as far as you remember?
Well, we went from there on to Phaleron.
No, I mean, how did the trouble start in Athens? I mean, had anything happened before you moved to Phaleron?
Oh, aye. The Phalerons had been having a ducky in Athens with them. They flew them in, and they went straight up there. There was a snot in the Germans left behind to encourage these fellas, these Elas, and whatever they were. And my best recollection of it, they mostly started at night time because they were frontiers, they were soldiers without uniform, as you might say. And at night time they were shooting everything up, all and sundry. And of course, going out in the streets at night is tricky, especially chaps like that, because he could walk past you down this street, go around the corner and shoot you in the back, you know, as it were. So it was a bit dodgy.
And this is when Les went on the streets, Les Thornton. In that was in Athens before you moved to Phaleron, was it?
No, in Phaleron.
Right.
In Phaleron.
Did you do much street searching, street patrols and searching in Athens, or was it when you got to Phaleron you started?
Well, mostly we got to Phaleron.
I think we'll move to Phaleron then. So you moved to Phaleron, and where were you? Where was your base in Phaleron? Do you remember?
In a little cat. Our platoon HQ was a little cafe on the front of the beach. We were all squared along, as it were, a promenade. And Phaleron runs into Pyrrhus, or whatever they call it, Piraeus, we call it, straight into Piraeus. At night, we'd go out, move forward with patrols. The story has it, the night that these lads were taken prisoner, so I was told, a couple of girls came in and said, look, be careful, they're going to attack your headquarters, which were a bit further down the road. So everybody's thoughts were engaged on the headquarters. And all of a sudden we swooped on this part of the building. We told the lads away. That's as near as I get to it. And of course it didn't bother much. It was everyday occurrence, so it was just another day. You didn't take over that much, and that was what was going on. Just see what happened the next day.
Did you fortify the buildings you were in along the coast road at all? I mean, you know, sandbag them up and.
There's sandbagging here and there. As I say, most of it, night time was the dodgy time. Once it went dark, all the night. A lot of nuisance, what I call nuisance shooting. Again, ulterior motive, stop you from sleeping. You hear shots fired. Now, they might have been in the air, but you don't know that. So you stood too, and then you send a patrol out. You send a patrol out here.
Now, what were the patrols like? Did you go on any of these?
Yeah.
Now, sorry, before we go, when had you been promoted then? When you, pretty soon after you got to Greece?
Yes.
And man's corporal and corporal pretty quick?
Oh, very quick. Of course, then, I mean, the sick, lame and lazy, we used to call it, forget the lazy, the sick and lame and wounded and whatever, promotion was pretty rapid, if you wanted it, at that stage of the game.
So what was so you'd be in charge of street patrols then?
Oh, yeah.
And can you remember what a typical one was like? I mean, how would you prepare for one of them?
Didn't really know. You took what you found. I mean, you didn't need a degree of silence because there was movement all around you. Hellish careful. It's just like walking around these streets at night. And then all of a sudden, somebody had fire at you from either the front, back, side, whatever. And then you'd play from there. Whether to follow them, take cover for a moment, then move on. There was no tactical picture. You really didn't know what you were doing.
Were you ordered to be careful about opening fire in case you hit real civilians? I mean,
we were trying to avoid real civilians, but, you know, people don't pay a lot of attention to that. I've got to be truthful. I mean, you wouldn't deliberately shoot a civilian, but if there's any doubt in your mind, and you might be wrong, it's better to be safe than sorry. You'd let fly.
What weapons would you use? I mean, would you use a specific weapon, i.e. the rifle that hits what you're aiming at, or would you still be using Stens and perhaps grenades?
We used quite a lot of rifles there, because if people were on rooftops or a distance away, a short barrel weapon hasn't the distance or the velocity. So you'd use rifles quite a bit for these odd bombs. The biggest show we had was a cement factory, which was quite heavily fortified. But other than that, it was dodgy stuff. Dangerous, but dodgy.
Were you aware, was your patrol attacked? I mean, were you aware of casualties?
Oh, it's not that regular.
Were you aware of casualties to civilians that were caused?
There was one story, two girls who were in one of the houses, Massey, he was called, Private Massey. He was noted to be one of the boys for the ladies. And these two girls had come, they were brewing up or whatever you have. And their little patch got attacked. And these two girls were filling magazines for the Bren Gun. And they both got shot dead.
By the ELAS?
Oh, aye. Oh, whether it's KK, ELAS, you didn't know what they were.
You weren't bothered who they were, in a sense.
No. But these two girls were killed. I don't know whether it's ever been put in the book, but they were shot. Of course, these houses were in, there was no windows in them. You know, all the windows were torn out. Man, it wasn't bad weather. It wasn't boiling out, but it wasn't bad weather. That was the whole campaign in a nutshell, actually. It was just street to street, house to house. And that was it.
Now, how exactly did you do a house to house search when you had to do one?
Well, they say a lot of them had no windows in, so that made life a lot easier. The success rate of the house clearing was about 10%, because, as I said, they weren't in uniform. They could ground their arms and walked up, out the back door down the street, most likely with a pistol in the pocket. So it was treacherous more than vicious. I think that's the words I would use. We had tanks. We had tanks supporting us where they were needed. One incident, just a touch of humour there, we took a factory which had barrels of booze in. So we ran in and we squirted the barrels with Sten gun fire. And of course the stuff was pouring out all over the place. So we were filling water bottles with it. Within a half an hour, with about six men unconscious. So that put the boppers on it, but we kept his water bottles. And Word got back to Case, he was still with us. He banned the oil. All the drink we had in the water bottles, we put in jerry cans and kept to the end of the war. It's absolutely true. Come the end of the war, all the lads said, "Where's this booze from? Follow on." And they went to the PRI store, Long Tom Reynolds, you've heard of Long Tom, and the brooms had burned a bloody hole in the jerry cans. It was brandy or something, a rum that had to be diluted. No wonder the lads were unconscious. Yeah, and they just fell down on the road. Man, they had a big foot. But, as I say, it was a funny campaign, to say the least.
Now, on one day, the 13th of December, there was a really big attack on all the positions.
That's right.
Do you remember that day and that attack? Where were you? Were you in your cafe? Well, were you in the cafe? You were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you didn't spend your day in the cafe. You'd move out during, especially when that attack came. And, again, most of that was at night time, Peter. It wasn't broad daylight. There was bangs. That's when the prisoners were taken. That's right. When they did the attack, but they sent a diversion. They sent these girls on, and they said, "You want to speak to the officer here, Stavron? We frightened. Elas attack your headquarters tonight." Well, they didn't. They attacked somewhere else, and that was a decoy. And that's when they winked at this one. Did you see they took the prisoners?
It says there were prisoners, but it doesn't describe it quite like that. But
yeah. Took quite a lot. I think it was 60 to 100.
Do you remember the attack on your? Did they attack your actual building?
Well, yeah, they did. Mostly small arms. They had mortars and they had rocket launchers. There was that stuff. What we used to call Irish confetti, flying around. You know, not what you call a large scale attack in wartime, but bad enough. Take on, as it were.
And what happened next then? This carried on for a while, the sort of counter-terrorism. But eventually they seem to be making some progress. How did you get on with the local population other than Elas and Kate?
Every time you marched down the street, they were clapping, coming out with bottles of Marlboro. Keep scrapping up. Oh, they were brilliant, the Greeks. Mind you, having said that, Peter, wherever you are, like Italy, if you walk through a village, they were all clapping, throwing bottles of vino at you, and food with one thing and another. And 3 weeks later, when you came out for a rest, the prices were sky high, and they were robbing you literally. So human nature, really. But the Greeks really took to us.
Do you remember the visit of Mr. Churchill, Eden
yeah.
and company?
I didn't know much about him at the time. To be honest with you, I didn't know he'd been there till later. None of us did. Very few of us knew about it. I don't think so.
And
I think he came on HMS Exeter or something, on a destroyer. Churchill and Anthony Eden, I think.
Now, you then began to move forward into Athens. Do you remember that?
Down the Mad Mile.
Why was it called that?
Well, when you went down there, it was shot at from every angle. It was a main MSR, main supply route. And they were hiding out in houses. Oh, it was a nightmare going down that road. They were shooting at you from pot shots. Hence the old sniper trick.
Would you shoot back?
Oh, aye. If you didn't know where they'd come from, let's why. At least they might think, you know, it's a bad shot.
So there was a high risk for civilians in the area.
Oh, totally high.
What were they doing, the civilians? Would they just keep down during things like this?
Well, the trouble is, these things flared up so quickly. You'd think you could go and you'd be, say, into Athens, and it would look reasonably normal. And half an hour later, the bullets flying left, right and centre. A group of them were coming and putting attack on a position or something. And hell of a thing let loose for a few hours. And of course, what helped the Greeks, like all the other countries, who'd been occupied, they would be accustomed to all this nonsense, this shooting and fighting and something, and that helped either. But we left there later and went on to Patras.
Before you left, do you remember anything else about the advance into Athens? Because that was quite successful, wasn't it?
Oh, I went quite well. There's not a lot to say about it.
What about Casey? Didn't he have a problem in Greece, you were saying? When was that?
Well, I can't say what. I don't know the date. But he said, Casey's leaving. I'm all available, so you come back. He wants to say his farewell message. And his farewell message was, he'd had a few that morning. Or he got the MC, a period award. You know, supposed to be immediate. And he said, well, the time has come. I'm near verbatim, as I remember. I'm going to say goodbye to you lot. No doubt a lot of you will fall by the wayside in the Brenner Pass. So you could tell. And then a few more words. But I want to thank you all for the support you've given. With a normal jargon you get. And off case he went. That was the last I ever saw him. He's dead now, his baptism. And of course, standing by him was Ron Shearer, Major Shearer, who's in Mansfield. Ronnie's just called him from there. And he's staying with us too. With Ron.
Why had Casey gone? Did it show itself in Greece?
Oh, yeah. You saw a lot more of them in Greece, because they were more tightly knit. We were in a little area. And not ill, we were in the eye. You could see it. And I think he had a drink problem.
Was it drink because of his nerves? Or was
it his nerves, I think. Like any other company commander, he took a hell of a lot of responsibility. And he'd had enough, and the commanding officer, Warrell at the time, he must have said at this time, he's a man, he's the adjudicator. They say, well, we want a replacement for that, we're sending one.
What did you think of some of the other officers? I mean, Bizard at the time. So, you've known these officers since, Vizard, Collins, Hay.
Collins. He was a regular. He was a rarity. He used to call him Flash Collins. I've spoken to him at reunions and that.
Was he in your company?
Oh, no. He was more to pretend, was Collins. So, very few know him as such. He got an MC, I think, did Collins. Yeah, he did. Peter, what I know about him, I can get up back of the stand. But I knew him. I saw him pass at Lieutenant College then, as it was. That's it.
So you know more about Hay, Vizard, Collins since than then?
I knew Ronnie Sherlaw.
What did you think of Ronnie Sherlaw then?
Harold Flynn type. He had a big handlebar moustache. Smart, very active, athletic. But you say, you weren't on speaking terms. He might pass you, those things like. But a good chap.
Sounds like you respected most of your officers.
Well, I certainly did. You get a lot of people that run them down, but they don't play fair. They have a hell of a responsibility in wartime. And you want to bear in mind, we're talking of men as when the war ended, had only been soldiers 4.5 to 5 years, most of them. So they crammed a lot in, and they had to learn quick in the hard school. And they thought, some did run away. I'm not going to quote them. That's human nature. And the responsibilities they had. Some thought they'd better, whatever happened to them, than leading men to the death. Some couldn't live with that. and I've spoke to them since on the same subject. And it's understandable. You get such a, and you get this nonsensical talk about, I don't believe a word of it. I've heard so many people say, the shop on the road, actually, you got rid of it. Lies. You might have felt like it at the time, but just not in my book. I'm not saying it hasn't happened. I wouldn't say that for sure. But I don't think so. I've heard them say, our officers, you know, get rid of it.
Have you heard of any particular officer that might have been said about? It was just sort of rumour.
But nothing as vicious or as violent as that. I've heard so many people talking about the war. Oh, it's shocking. I don't know. All that shocking. They never mind. I don't believe it.
What about the colonel himself, Worrell? I mean, he's right above you, I know that, but did he have an impact at all in the battalion, do you think?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, he might not have existed. The only time I met him when I went up to become a Lance Corporal. He told me I had a good career, the normal patter. You stay with us and you have a good career and the regiment's proud of you. Go and do a good job out. That's all I'm going to look at, Colonel Worrell. And any other rank in wartime, if he speaks the truth, that's all he does know about him.
Did he have a reputation at all? I mean, without knowing a colonel, you can still have an opinion of him. Do you know what I mean? Did the men like him?
They're really too far from for us to have any contact with. You get a lot of people that say he's a lot of rubbish. A playboy. I don't know what he was like. If an attack went in, and a battalion attack, and it failed, but the CO was a lot of damage. People don't know what happened to these things. So it would be very unfair to commit yourself about any officer like that, other than the ones who actually served it.
Now, so after the attack on Athens, you moved to Patras, I think.
Patras,
however you say it, yeah. What do you remember of the situation there?
I say that 6 and 2 for East Victor. We went from one situation to a similar situation. And while we were there, the ceasefire, whatever you like to call it, happened. It finished there.
There was no trouble when you got there then?
There were a few shots, yeah. Half passage. I don't know how we went there. I mean, to be honest, we went on a ship. Went on a landing craft as well.